Well, process units at Marsden Point have now been shut down, marking an end to the refining operation at the plant. From tomorrow, Refining New Zealand becomes Channel Infrastructure, and the 60-year-old refinery becomes an import-only terminal for already refined products, something critics say may have an impact on our fuel security. Energy Minister Megan Woods told 9 to Noon 2 weeks ago her advice was that it would not change the fundamentals of how we get fuel here, crude or refined. Neither would it impact energy security. A big part of this discussion is that locally produced oil here still needs to be mixed with imported crude in order to produce potentially up to 20% of our fuel supplies. So a risk to supply of one would suggest there would be a disruption to the supply of the other. The refinery transition will, though, prompt big changes to our fuel reserves. And Simon Terry from the Sustainability Council says it could see the need for a massive new investment in storage capacity, something he says is likely to end up being passed on to motorists. As we've also discussed previously on 9 to Noon, reserves have till now been counted as to include fuel on its way to New Zealand, oil on its way to New Zealand, or fuel products in ships. The government is now considering how to change those requirements given we no longer have the onshore refinery. Simon Terry is with us. Good morning. Good to talk to you.
Good morning.
So we've come at this story from many angles. Let's look now at this question of what the end of Marsden as a refinery means for onshore requirements. Your reading of things as we've been told so far.
Marsden Point, contrary to the Minister's assurances the other week on your program, can actually process Taranaki crude by itself. It can be processed more efficiently. You can get more petrol and diesel out of a barrel of crude if it's mixed with heavier crude. But in fact, information obtained from the refinery by government officials allowed them to calculate that 3 to 5% of annual demand could be produced by the refinery in its current configuration. And if you change the physical plant further, you can get something close to that 20% of annual demand that we produce from Taranaki crude.
It's very difficult to get clarity on this because I put just this point to the Minister and she was insistent that we could not get, as I recall correctly, could not even get the 3 to 5%. We could not get our own supply here without a reconfiguration that would take 2 to 3 years. You're getting different information.
I can't account for why the Minister got it wrong, but that is the basis on which it is understood from the information obtained from the refinery by government. What that means is that if we close the refinery and allow it to be demolished in particular, that work due to commence next week, we take away an option for improving resilience in a crisis. This is your worst-case option. This is when you want the refinery either to be still running or you want it in a state where you could reactivate it if it's mothballed. That decision's coming up very fast, and the demolition needs to be paused to allow that consideration.
So, again, her perspective was, and I'm listening to you very clearly, but her perspective was, and if I recall her correct, we've never had the capacity to produce up to 20%, or I'm sure I heard her say, even that 3 to 5% absolutely emergency level, without undertaking a reconfiguration that would take 2 to 3 years. You're saying your information, your understanding is we could do the 3 to 5% now using Taranaki crude alone, and we could do up to 20% if we did the reconfiguration. Right.
Correct.
All of that got weighed up. The decision got made. The information appears to be slightly under debate. It's been made. And the question now is, you're saying, let's keep another option at least in reserve by not destroying the infrastructure that's there. What is planned for demolition?
In the coming week, they're talking about taking out the exchanger bundles. That's just the first stage of the process, and that would be expensive to replace if it was trash. So it's a progressive rolling sort of cycle of work. But it's not hard to imagine a minister, if they wanted the option, to consider other uses for that plant than just scrapping it, to pick up the phone and ask the refining company to pause that work. I mean, if you recall the Minister's indication on your program that she wants to see more onshore storage in the wake of the Ukraine invasion, retaining a functional refinery would be a lot cheaper than building new storage tanks.
But she still argues it's not a functional refinery as it is.
I think that's something you're going to have to clarify with her. If that's the case, I stand by my information that the refinery can process Taranaki crude, not very efficiently, not very economically, but in a crisis, it could produce that 3 to 5% minimum before you do any other things to augment the refinery. And that's roughly corresponds to what you'd need to run critical emergency services, such as fire ambulance utilities, and keeping food on supermarket shelves. That's what is critical if things go bust.
You'll have heard me put that point many times, including to the minister. So, the decision's made. The next thing is the implications for reserves. I'm hearing what you're saying. It's not too late to stop demolition. It's not too late for a rethink. The minister said that actually in the wake of Ukraine there was a review, and if I recall correctly, it seemed to happen in about one day. But officials came back and said the same thing, that if there's a disruption to refined products coming into New Zealand because of conflicts or whatever, there would be the same disruption to crude coming in. We won't continue going around in circles. That's the basis on which they made the decision. What are the implications for storage? Now, just remind people of how the storage requirements operate now and the split between some on land and being able to count as reserve stock that's at sea.
Yes, so under the International Energy Agency agreement New Zealand's a party to, New Zealand's required to maintain 90 days worth of reserves, but the great bulk of that is held offshore and only about 20 days on average onshore in New Zealand. So that is part of what's prompting the reconsideration of looking to have more of that onshore. A consultation document put out in January put up various options, and at the moment it proposed leaving storage roughly the same and absolute capacity while raising putting a requirement on fuel wholesalers to ensure there was a minimum of 24 days diesel and jet fuel, 24 days petrol and jet fuel and 28 days of diesel.
What are the implications of trying to increase storage capacity on land? And if I heard the minister again correctly, this idea of being able to count such a substantial portion of your reserves while they're at sea is under review. If we did have to hold a lot more reserves actually on land, what's that going to require by means of infrastructure?
The base case is that you have to put up more storage tanks. But if what is ultimately needed to run the nation is thought about in terms of reserve capability rather than simply storage tanks, then the refinery turns out to be not just a low-cost option, but one ideally suited to be part of the mix, because it can provide what you'd call perpetual storage, an amount that could be produced continuously from domestic crude. Now, perpetual storage is more valuable because that volume doesn't run out. It's particularly suited to those high-value uses, those emergency services. Now, whether the refinery is a running thing at the time or whether it's something that's simply kept in reserve to fire up for this, that's what would give you an ability to hold that perpetual storage. And that could be a great deal cheaper than building the equivalent amount of new tanks.
Do you have estimates for each?
This is back-of-the-envelope stuff, and it so depends on what specification you want to use. But if you say that those emergency services should basically be available under any scenario, take, for example, if you wanted 2 years' reserve supply of about 5% of New Zealand demand, that's going to cost you about $600 million in tank construction alone before looking at land and pipeline costs. Keeping the refinery running, as we understand it at the moment, would not be very expensive because refining margins have recovered to the point that the refining company is currently repaying out of earnings some of what it borrowed from its fuel wholesalers last year. Further, it's not the kind of thing that is expected to continue to require any help, and a loan the government considered in September to keep it going would probably repay itself quite handsomely.
So it would be less than the $600 million new investment?
On the figures and forecasts before us at this moment, it's a great deal cheaper If you wanted a long-term option on keeping essential services running, you'd back the refinery rather than building new tanks.
Let's clarify. It's Refining New Zealand, which includes, has members that are major fuel companies here, major oil companies here. It's Refining New Zealand that is closing this plant. However, there is clearly a national interest here, and there's been a lot of discussion with the government, and there's always been the potential that the government might put forward a subsidy in order to sustain the life of the plant. Who's going to pay for new storage capacity if that is the way this plays out and it's the way it's heading?
Pretty clearly, it's going to be fuel users. There is some possibility the government will contribute something to national storage, but the consultation document leaves it pretty still up in the air exactly how this will pan out. But it does say very clearly, quote, "We propose changes to the formula for calculating the petroleum and engine fuel monitoring levy, which would allow the levy rate to be set in a more transparent way and align better with the projected costs of maintaining New Zealand's fuel reserve commitments." So that levy, which currently raises half a cent a litre on every sale, that's going up, and that is going to be part of this funding.
After the Ukraine invasion, the Prime Minister, Energy Minister indicated to a business breakfast, I think, that she did want to have a look again at this. And she told us on the programme she did, and that look must have happened in a matter of a day or two. Do you believe, right at this 11th hour, that there is a value in pausing again and looking at the whole strategic overview again?
I think there are enough straws in the wind now to make some of those assessments worthy of reconsideration. But, you know, to be honest, we have done security of supply on the cheap. We were an outlier compared to European nations that generally have 90 days storage onshore. We were an outlier in terms of not having arrangements to ensure our refinery was going continuously, the way Australia has made sure that its two remaining refineries will never close. We were an outlier before these new factors coming in, such as the head of BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, saying globalization is over and governments need to look at supply chains in a particular energy. People are re-rating everything across the board. And this is a moment where every transport operator, every logistics firm, every airline, and each of the major industry association bodies, from Fed Farmers to Business New Zealand, needs to send a one-line email to the minister and say, pause the demolition.
Can she do that at this late stage, given, again, it's a Refining New Zealand decision? Can she pause it at this late stage?
All she needs to do is pick up the phone to Refining New Zealand and make the request. It would be an unusual company that would balk at a request to simply pause some work that doesn't affect the ongoing operation of getting fuel across the country.
Simon, thank you. Simon Terry is with the Sustainability Council.